Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now for introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Teresa Hamilton. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Welcome to today's WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. My name is Teresa Hamilton, and I will be the moderator for this call. This call is being recorded, and within 24 to 48 hours, an MP3 file and presentation will be available on the Technical Exchange site, so you may replay it at your convenience. If you have not yet joined the e-meeting, please do so now. An e-meeting URL is available to you from the Technical Exchange site. If you're unable to access the e-meeting at this time, you may access the presentation from the Technical Exchange site or by going to an IBM.com site and typing the tech doc number 7006924 in the search box in the black section at the very top of the page. You may also instant message the co-moderator, Mary Reese, by clicking on reesemk@us.ibm.com in the e-meeting attendee list, and she will assist you. Today's presenter is Shayla Robinson. She joined IBM in July of 1997 as a customer support representative for TIX. Over the years, she has acquired experience providing assistance to customers on various problems. In recent years, she began focusing on the Java programming language and its introduction into KIX. Today's topic is understanding KIX and Java. It will include a PowerPoint presentation followed by a question and answer session. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, the lines will be open for question and answer for the question and answer session. If you are in the e-meeting, you will see the presentation. At this point, I would like to turn the presentation over to Shayla.
Thank you, Teresa. First, let me start off by saying welcome to everyone who was able to join us today. The title of this presentation is Understanding CICS in Java, and we will be taking a look at how CICS has extended support for Java workloads over the various releases, how classes can be shared between different JVMs, the different JVM reuse modes introduced with the persistent reusable JVM, how TCDs are managed, and at the end, we will take a brief look at how to set up CICS to run a Java application. So let's begin on page 2. Why support Java and CICS? Over the years, Java has grown in popularity throughout the industry. For many organizations, it is the programming language of choice, where its portability offers developers the freedom to deploy their applications on any platform. Many of today's large enterprises looking to move to an e-business approach will be looking to build new applications that exploit the new technologies as well as extend their existing proven core business applications. For many years, CICS has led the way in the implementation of new technology to support the transaction processing of mission-critical applications. CICS support for Java has evolved through a number of stages, transforming it into a powerful application server. It now provides a platform to move towards an e-business environment, exploiting the latest technologies and increasing the overall investment in KIX. CICS provides the support you need to run a Java program in a ZOS Java virtual machine, executing under the control of a CICS region. KIX support for JVMs allows you to run KIX applications written in a Java language and compiled to bytecode by any standard Java compiler. This takes advantage of the simple development, the robustness, and the portability of the Java language. As we turn to page 3, we take a brief look at the evolution of Java within CICS. CICS Transaction Server 1.3 was the first release to support Java applications under CICS and provided support for the CORBA IIOP protocol. Java support was limited to the JDK 1.18 level. In this release, the Java bytecode could either be interpreted by the standard ZOS JVM or compiled to machine code by the high-performance Java compiler provided by VisualAIDS for Java. The JDK 1.1 level of JVM was not designed for reuse, so at this level, the JVM was initialized, used, and then terminated for each CICS JVM program. This made it very expensive in terms of path length. JVM support was only provided in KIX Transaction Server 1.3 to provide the ability to execute those parameters of the Java API that were not supported by the HPJ. It allowed Kicks Java programs to access CICS services. It linked to existing Kicks legacy programs such as COBOL or Assembler using the JKicks classes. The next release of CICS, Transaction Server 2.2, was a technology release that introduced support for Enterprise Beans and IBM Persistent Reusable JVM. In this release, Java support for the JDK 1.18 level of the JVM was dropped in preference to the new SDK 1.3.1S Persistent Reusable JVM. Support for HPJ and hot pooling HPJ remain, but only for migration purposes. On slide number 4, we see that in Kicks Transaction Server 2.3, this release built on the key capabilities and benefits delivered in the previous releases by dramatically enhancing Kicks support for Java. It supports the JDK 1.4.1 level of the IBM SDK for ZOS. Improvements were made in this release to the way JVMs are allocated to tasks and JVM pool management to minimize JVM stealing. Enhancements were also made to Kicks monitoring and statistics to allow better tuning and problem diagnosis. In the related release of CICS, Transaction Server 3.1, a Kicks application can now be a web service provider and requester. This release of Kicks supports the IBM SDK 1.4.2 level for ZOS and enables the reuse of Kicks applications within a flexible, on-demand operating environment. Kicks TS 3.1 provides a rich set of web services capabilities which extend CICS applications to a service-oriented architecture. This enables them to be exposed directly as web services. Kicks Transaction Server 3.1 provides new resources and configuration files that make system configuration and management of web services easy. This presentation focuses more so on the changes and enhancements that occurred in Kicks Transaction Server 2.3 and not so much on the web services that were introduced in Kicks Transaction Server 3.1. That being said, on the next slide, number 5, we take a look at the types of programs that can be ran in a CICS TS region. You can write Java programs that use the JKicks class library, which allows you to use CICS services and execute under CICS control. JKicks allows access to Kicks resources such as vSAN files, transient data queues, and temporary storage. It also allows you to link to Kicks applications written in other languages. The JKicks class library is supplied in the dfjcics.jar file and can be downloaded directly to your workstation. The second type of program that can be written are stateless CORBA objects, which are Java Server applications that communicate with a client application using the IIoP protocol. Stateless CORBA objects can receive inbound requests from a client and can make outbound IIoP requests. These objects can use the JKicks API to interact with CICS and can execute only in the Kicks JVM. Enterprise Java Beans are the third type of applications that can be ran. CICS has implemented EJB interfaces by mapping them to underlying CICS services. EJBs can link to other Kicks applications using connections. You can also develop Enterprise Beans that use the JKicks class library to access Kicks services or programs directly. But these applications are not portable to a non-CICS EJB compliant server platform. EJBs, like the stateless CORBA objects, can only execute within the Kicks JVM. It is important to note that CICS does not support entity beans, only session beans, and it is not fully J2EE compliant. On slide number 6, you see an example of a CICS program resource definition. For a Java program, you need to specify a few key parameters to enable it to run in a JVM. The first is the exec key option, which indicates where the program is to run. It can either be in Kicks key or user key, and the default is user key. Next is the JVM parameter, which states whether the program is a Java program that has to be run in a JVM. The JVM class option specifies the name of the main class in the Java program that is to run in the JVM. And lastly, the JVM profile option specifies the name of the profile that CICS is to use for the JVM that will run this program. It can be up to 8 characters, and the default profile is DFH JVM PR. For JVM programs, the language option is irrelevant. And as far as concurrency is concerned, all JVM programs must be thread-safe. One additional note is that mixed case input is now allowed for the JVM class and JVM profile settings, so you must be careful when specifying these within your program definitions. On slide number 7, we'll discuss storage protection of Java programs. Prior to CICS Transaction Server 2.3, all Java programs ran in KixKey on a J8 TCD. Unlike before, where the exec key parameter was ignored by Kix, you can now set it to run Java programs in a JVM that executes in either KixKey or UserKey. When you set the exec key parameter to UserKey, a J9 TCB is used for that JVM, and NVS storage is obtained in UserKey. When the exec key parameter is set to KixKey, a J8 TCB is used, and the NVS storage is obtained in KixKey. The default for the exec key parameter is user. As running applications in UserKey extends CICS storage protection, it could be beneficial to let most of your Java applications run in a JVM in UserKey. However, you might need to execute a JVM in CICS key if the program that uses the JVM is part of a transaction that specifies task data key Kix. If this is the case, you need to invoke the JVM using a program resource definition that specifies exec key Kix. When storage protection is turned off, a J8 TCB is used and the Java programs are ran in KixKey. On the next slide, number 8, we see that you can now use the Kix program link mechanism to invoke more than one Java program within the same CICS task. There used to be a restriction where only one JVM per stack was allowed, and this has now been lifted. Previously, a stack of programs formed by a succession of exec Kix link commands or JKix program invocations within the same CICS task could not contain more than one JVM. As a CICS task could only use one JVM, applications designed in this way could only contain one Java component. However, it was possible for a distributed program link request to link to another Java program. In Kix Transaction Server 2.3 or higher, multiple JVMs can now be allocated to a CICS task. You can create an application that links together multiple Java programs in the same CICS region. So at any given time, a task can have multiple J8 and J9 TCBs running. This improvement makes it possible to convert your existing complex applications piece by piece by replacing programs written in other languages with programs written in Java. Note that enterprise beans can now also link to another Java program within the same CICS task. However, a single CICS task still cannot contain more than one enterprise bean because Kix treats an execution of an enterprise bean as the start of a new task. You can create an application that includes more than one enterprise bean, but the application will not operate as a single task. Next slide, 9, please. When managing TCBs, each CICS region has a limit for the maximum number of TCBs it has for its Java workload. This limit is defined using the sit option max JVM TCBs, whose default is 5. One TCB is used for each JVM, and the set of JVMs that CICS controls is known as the JVM pool. The maximum pool size is equal to the value of max JVM. A JVM is allocated from the JVM set by matching the JVM profile and the exec key setting. With storage protection active, the JVM pool can contain a mixture of JVMs running with J8 and J9 TCBs at the same time. The JVM pool can contain a number of JVMs which have been started with the same JVM profile or with different profiles. There are CMT and SPI commands available to inquire on the JVM and JVM pool, or to make changes to the pool. The inquire JVM pool command can be used to display information about the JVM pool, if any JVMs exist. Set JVM can be used to enable or disable the JVM pool, or to terminate it altogether. An inquire JVM can be used to display all the JVMs in the CICS region. In this diagram, we see that for the JVM pool, the max JVM TCBs is set to the default of 5, and there are currently 5 JVMs within this pool. First JVM, JVM1, was created using the JVM profile DFH-JVM-PR, the default JVM profile, and is running in Kix Key, so it is running on a J8 TCB. JVM2 was created using a user JVM1 profile in user key and is running on a J9 TCB. JVM3 was created using a DFH JVM CD profile, which is the JVM profile for the default request processor program. This JVM is running in user key also on a J9 TCB. JVM4 was created with a user JVM1 profile in Kix Key and is running on a J8 TCB. And JVM5 was created using the default DFH JVM-PR in user key and is also running on a J9 TCB. Also from this diagram, you can see that at any given time, all JVMs may not be allocated to a task, and some may be available for reuse. On slide number 10, we begin the discussion on the shared class cache. To support the shared class cache, the JDK introduced the concept of a JVM set, which is comprised of one master JVM and one set, and a set of one or more worker JVMs. This allows multiple JVMs to share a single class cache, which can contain the JVM base classes, which are the classes that are part of the JVM distribution, and the standard extensions to the JDK, such as JNDI, RDL, DAP classes. It can contain the trusted middleware classes, which are the classes trusted to maintain a clean state across the JVM reset, such as the JKIX interface classes, the IBM-supplied JDBC drivers, the CCI connector for KIX, or the EJB containers. And it contains the shareable application classes, which are classes shared between the different JVMs. KIX supports one active shared class cache in each region. The class cache can support the majority of the JVMs in each region. Some of the JVMs in the region might not be suited to sharing the class cache because they are either debug JVMs used for problem diagnosis or because they have an inappropriate level of reusability. These JVMs can still run as standalone JVMs and have their own cache of classes in their own storage heaps. The shared class cache is initialized by a JVM referred to as the master JVM, which runs on its open JM TCB. The master JVM cannot be used to run Java applications. Its sole purpose is to initialize and own the shared class cache. The master JVM obtains shared storage in which its system heap is allocated containing class files as well as the JIT compiled classes, which can be shared by all the worker JVMs. There is at most one active shared class cache and therefore at most one master JVM per CICS region. The JVMs that share the class cache are referred to as worker JVMs and run on either the J8 or J9 TCBs. These are the JVMs that actually run the Java workload. The worker JVMs use the classes loaded in the shared class cache instead of having to load these classes from the file system directly. Although the worker JVMs share the class cache, each worker JVM owns its own data, such as the objects and static variables for the applications that it's running. This helps to maintain the isolation between the Java applications being processed in the system. The worker JVMs in a CICS region all have the same level of reusability as the master JVM. So if the master JVM is resettable, then the worker JVM is resettable as well. The shared class cache can be activated by specifying class cache equals yes in the JVM profile. Using the shared class cache improves the performance of JVMs in two respects. Average startup time for a new JVM is reduced because the shareable classes will, in most cases, have been preloaded in the shared class cache. And the memory used by shareable classes is reduced because there's a single copy of each class in the shared class cache rather than one copy for each JVM. On slide number 10, we see some of the benefits of the shared class cache. The master and worker JVMs use the same library path, which is the path for the native C dynamic link library files that are used by the JVM. This ensures that they are using the same versions of these files. However, these files are not loaded into the shared class cache. Unless they are shared through another ZOS facility, a copy is loaded into each worker JVM. The library path and trusted middleware class path for the shared class cache are defined in the JVM profile for the master JVM. And the shareable application class path for the shared class cache is defined in the JVM properties file for the master JVM. For a worker JVM, CICS ignores these class paths if they are specified, and instead uses the values specified for these class paths in the JVM profile and JVM properties file for the master JVM. This allows the worker JVMs to start up more quickly and use less storage. Worker JVMs are the most efficient in that the sharing of the classes in the JIT compiled code means that each JVM doesn't have to go through the same loading and building process. This uses the DASX quick start option, which can also help startup time by only doing a partial compile of Java code at this time. If the code is seen to be used a large number of times, later on it is recompiled to give more efficient JIT compiled code. The initial compile under these circumstances is cheaper, but the JIT compiled code is not as efficient to run. Prior to SDK 1.4.1, the second compile would not happen, so although startup was quicker, subsequent runtime would be compromised. JVM startup time, although expensive, should not be a performance impact in a well-behaved system. Once a JVM is started, it should be able to stay initialized for long periods of time, so effectively the startup should be a one-off cost. The shared class cache is basically what its name says. It's a cache of classes, bytecode and the JIT compiled code classes. It is not a cache for data, such as the static variable members. Do not confuse the shared class cache with the JVMs running in continuous mode. A continuous JVM allows data to be shared across program invocations, whereas the shared class cache does not allow data to be shared across JVMs. It allows classes to be shared across the JVM. On slide number 12, we take a look at defining a shared class cache. To define the shared class cache, you use the JVM CC size sit parameter to specify the initial size of the shared class cache on an initial and code start. It can be between 1 to 2,047 megabytes in size with a default size of 24 meg. The size that you specify for the shared class cache needs to be large enough to contain the classes up for your applications, except for any classes on the standard class path, because those classes are not placed in a shared class cache, and the JIT compiled code for the classes. The shared class cache is mainly defined through the JVM profile used for the master JVM. The class cache underscore message log option can be specified to name the file for messages to be written to from the master JVM. The default is dshjvmccmsg.log. Some options are not appropriate for a master JVM, and if specified, will be ignored by CICS. For further information of which options are appropriate, you can refer to the KICS definition guide. The JVM properties file for a master JVM omits most of the system properties that would be specified for a normal JVM, since the master JVM is not used to run Java applications. The only system parameter that needs to be specified is the shareable application class path defined in the ibm.jvm.shareable.application.class.path parameter. You should use this property to specify the shareable application classes for all the applications that were run in Worker JVM that use the shared class cache. Note that the shareable application class path takes precedence over the JVM application class path within the class loader hierarchy. By default, the DFHJVMCC profile specifies the option reuse equal reset, so the master JVM and Worker JVMs are resettable. You can modify this profile to change this setting or substitute your own JVM profile. There are three ways to start the shared class cache. The first is by setting JVM CC start in the set, which determines whether or not the shared class cache is started during KICS initialization. Or you can enable auto start for declared class cache via the CEMT perform class auto start command. ARDIS option can be issued directly within CICS. On the next slide, we see how to define the worker JVM to use the shared class cache. To enable a JVM to be a worker JVM and use the shared class cache, you need to ensure that the JVM profile used by that JVM states class cache equals yes. If a JVM in the region cannot share the class cache because they have an inappropriate level of reusability or are being used for program diagnosis, they need to use a JVM profile that specifies class cache equal no. The default JVM profile, DSH JVM PR, states class cache equal no. So if you use this JVM profile, the JVM does not use the shared class cache and runs independently as a standalone JVM. The supplied sample JVM profile, DSH JVM PC, does state class cache equals yes and is compatible with the shared class cache created by the master JVM that is ran with the JVM profile DSH JVM CC. So if you want a JVM to use the shared class cache, you can specify DSH JVM PC as the JVM profile on the program resource definition. On slide number 14, we take a look at an example JVM pool with a shared class cache. To inquire or alter the settings of the class cache, the CNC and SPI commands can be used. Perform class cache can be used to initialize or terminate the shared class cache. Inquire class cache returns information about the shared class cache in the CICS region. And set class cache can be used to set the status of auto start for the shared class cache. The shared class cache is initialized by a master JVM created by the JVM profile DSH JVM CC, which is the default JVM profile for the master JVM. And in this case, it's executing in user key. The master JVM is running on a JMTCB. In this diagram within the JVM pool, there are three worker JVMs, JVM 6, 7, and 9, that are using the shared class cache, and there are two standalone JVMs, JVM 8 and 10, which are not. Two of the worker JVMs, JVM 6 and 7, were created using the DSH JVM PC profile in user key and are running on a J9 TCB. The JVM 9 was created with the JVM profile user JVM 1 and Kicks key and is running on a J8 TCB. When a shared class cache was introduced, the JVM profile user JVM 1 was changed to state that JVMs with that profile used the shared class cache. JVM 8, a standalone JVM, was created using the JVM profile DSH JVM PR in user key and is running on a J9 TCB. Since it was created with DSH JVM PR, it does not use the shared class cache, as well as JVM 10, which is also a standalone JVM, which was created using the profile user JVM 2, and Kicks key, and it's also running on a JATCB. The JVM profile user JVM2 was not changed when the shared class cache was introduced, and JVMs with that profile do not use the shared class cache. On the next slide, number 15, we take a look at the different types of modes that a JVM can be ran in. In Kicks Transaction Server 2.3 and 3.1, a JVM can run under one of three modes. The first is single-use mode. In single-use mode, the JVM is not kept in the JVM pool for reuse. Instead, the JVM is initialized, used to run a single Java program, and then is automatically destroyed without attempting a JVM reset. To set the JVM to run in single-use mode, you set the reuse option to no in the JVM profile. This is equivalent to the Java property extra settable equals no, which is still available for migration purposes. The single-use JVM has the lowest performance of any of the JVM types in terms of transaction throughput because the JVM must be initialized for each use. Some time is saved by the absence of a reset, but this is less than the time used to initialize the JVM. Because the JVM is destroyed after each use, it is not possible for application code to affect subsequent program invocations by changing the state of the JVM or by passing going state. And unresettable events are not logged in a single-use JVM. The single-use JVM is not recommended for running Java applications in a production environment, and it should not be used for Java applications comprising of enterprise beams or which are started by IIoP requests. It is only beneficial for Java applications that were originally designed to run in a single-use JVM and have not been made suitable for running in a JVM that is intended for reuse. The single-use JVM is like the JVMs that were supported in the earlier releases of CICS. If you use a single-use JVM, you can invoke the user-replaceable program, DFH-JVM-AT, to change the options in the JVM profile as you could in KIXTS 1.3. On slide number 16, we see that the next mode is the resettable JVM mode. The resettable JVM can be started and used to run consecutive Java applications, resetting its storage areas between each invocation. This mode of operation offers the same isolation as the single-use mode. It prevents that changes to the state of the JVM can be made by an application program that can affect the operation of the next program to run in the same JVM. It is, however, much more efficient than single-use mode. It avoids the overhead of destroying and starting the JVM. Classes and JIT compiled code can be shared between JVMs, thus reducing the I/O for loading the classes and the CPU time for the JIT compilation. To set the JVM to run in resettable mode, set reuse equal reset in the JVM profile. This is equivalent to the Java property option xresettable equals yes, which is also still available for migration purposes only. The persistent reusable JVM operates by splitting the heap into various different segments and having different garbage collection algorithms for the different heaps. And we'll take a look at how garbage collection is done on the different heaps on a later slide. The resettable JVM provides the benefits of reuse while offering the greatest protection between program invocations. It is intended as an intermediate solution for running applications that are not known to be safe for running in continuous mode. Note that the next release of the JDK, level 1.5, will no longer support resettable mode. So support for this mode will be removed in a future release of CICS. Therefore, you should design new applications to be able to run in continuous mode and be prepared to migrate the existing code to also run in continuous mode. On slide number 17, the last mode is continuous mode. The continuous JVM can be kept in the JVM pool for reuse. With this type of JVM, the JVM is initialized once and is reused many times, but it is not reset after each Java program has completed. To set the JVM to run in a continuous mode, set reuse equals yes in the JVM profile. The continuous JVM has a greater transaction throughput and lower CPU uses than the resettable JVM because it is not performing the reset. The absence of the reset also means that the application code that runs in the next Java program or transaction might be affected by the actions of the previous program invocation. If your applications have been designed and tested to ensure that they can run in continuous JVM mode without causing any undesirable consequences for subsequent program invocations in the same JVM, then they can benefit from this performance enhancement. This mode offers the best performance for running Java programs in CICS, but unlike the resettable JVM, it does not prevent programs from being affected by the actions of a previous program invoked within the same JVM. This continuous option is in some ways similar to defining an application as thread safe. You are promising CICS that the application has no requirements to remember anything that has gone on in the past. This is a promise, not a policy. CICS takes no action to validate if your application is really continuous in nature. So, as a thread safe, if you tell CICS your application is continuous when it really is not, this can lead to unpredictable results. On slide 18, we take a look at how JVM storage is managed. A JVM manages runtime storage in several segregated heaps. Objects are grouped in these heaps according to their expected lifetime. JVMs are able to exploit the grouping of these objects by using heap-specific garbage collection. Each JVM executes within its own LE enclave using storage allocations set by CICS. The system heap, which might contain system class objects that persist for the lifetime of the JVM. So for this JVM, for this heap, JVMs never perform garbage collection. Worker JVMs, which are those with class clash equals yes defined in a JVM profile, do not have a system heap because they use the master JVM system heap. The JVM profile option XINITSH specifies the initial size of the system heap, and the default is 128 kilobytes. The application class system heap contains the class objects representing the shareable application classes, which persist for the lifetime of the JVM and are reinitialized if the JVM is reset. JVMs never perform garbage collection on this heap, and as the system heap, the worker JVMs do not have an application class system heap because they use the master JVM. Continuous and single-use JVMs also do not have an application class system heap because these types of JVMs are not reset after use. The JVM profile option, XINITACSH, specifies the initial size of the application class system heap, and its default is 128 kilobytes. The non-system heap is made up of two subheaps. The middleware heap, which contains the objects whose lifetime is greater than a single transaction. JVMs perform garbage collection on this heap. All types of JVMs have a middleware heap, and the JVM option XMS specifies the initial size of the middleware heap with a default of 500 kilobytes. The transient heap contains objects whose lifetime is the same as the transaction using it. The segregation of this heap from the middleware heap improves performance of garbage collection. JVMs can perform garbage collection on this heap if it runs out of space in the non-system heap. It is also completely deleted if a JVM is reset. The JVM profile option, XMX, specifies the maximum size and bytes of the memory allocation pool. This is a fixed amount of storage allocated by the JVM during initialization to define the maximum total size for the transient and middleware heaps. The default is 64 kilobytes. If XMX is set too small, this could cause excessive garbage collection to result, and this can show up as spikes in the JVM reset time. If it's set too big, this will cause virtual storage to be overused and less JVMs to be available per region. On slide 19, we see how to tune the LE enclave storage. A JVM in Kix runs in a Unix System Services process in a language environment enclave, which is created using the language environment pre-initialization model CEPIPI, and it uses NVS LE services rather than the Kix LE services. Therefore, all storage obtained by the JVM is NVS storage. This storage resides within the Kix address space but is not included in the Kix DSAs. The language environment enclave for each JVM needs to contain not only the storage heap but also a basic amount of storage for each JVM. This basic storage cost represents the amount of storage in the LE enclave that is used for the structure of the JVM. When you calculate the total size of the JVM, the basic storage cost must be added to the storage that is used for the storage heap. The storage settings can be modified using the assembler user exit DSH JVM RO. In this diagram, you can see that the basic LE runtime options used by Kix for a JVM enclave. Further information, these are documented in the LE programming guide under Developing an Application under CICS. On slide number 20, we take a look at tuning the JVM storage. When tuning JVM storage, the goal is to let CICS control when garbage collection is to occur. Kix currently forces garbage collection cycle by default every 101 transactions. This cycle can be configured using the max_resets_2_gc option in the JVM profile. In between these automatic garbage collections, if a JVM runs out of space in one of its storage heaps and is unable to allocate any more objects, an allocation failure can occur. The garbage collector tries to expand the storage heap. If there is not enough free storage available, a full garbage collection is triggered to free some storage. It is better to tune the heap settings to avoid the situation from occurring. The messages output for garbage collection can show whether the JVM profile contains the right settings for the initial and maximum sizes of the storage heaps. Set verbose equal GC in the JVM profile you want to tune. This will cause the JVM to output garbage collection messages. By default, these messages are output to a file specified by the standard error option in the profile, which defaults to DFJVM ERR. On slide 21, we'll take a look at some of the sample garbage collection messages. Garbage collection output can be used to tune storage heap settings in a JVM profile. For basic tuning, there are four common types of output to identify in the file. The first is output from a garbage collection that has been automatically requested by CICS. HIX makes this request every 101 transactions. If the value for the XMX option in the JVM profile is too large, most of the output in your file will look like this, once heap inspection is no longer taking place. You can base your storage heap settings on the values in this output. The next type of output is from a heap expansion. This particular heap expansion is caused by an allocation failure, so it is surrounded by the allocation failure lines, which begin with the AF. Heap expansion can also occur as part of a garbage collection, in which case the allocation failure lines might not be present. Heap expansion for the middleware heap does not have any special indication of the heap type, but for allocation failures for the transient heap expansion, those are marked with a TH underscore AF on the allocation failure line. On slide 22, the third type of garbage collection messages are caused by an allocation failure. This output looks a lot like the output from a garbage collection that is requested by CICS, except for the fact that it is surrounded by the allocation failure line. Within the same allocation failure lines, you might also see messages relating to heap shrinkage or heap expansion. This type of output occurs because there is insufficient space in one of the storage heaps for the JVM to allocate an object, but the middle heap and the transient heaps have already been expanded to fill the amount of storage specified by the XMX option in the JVM profile. The garbage collection is intended to make storage available to fulfill the JVM's allocation request. And last, the fourth type of output is from a request to expand the JVM system heap or the application class system heap. This type of output occurs because the JVM has insufficient space in the system heap or in the application class system heap. Since garbage collection does not take place in either of these heaps, there is no benefit in setting these values smaller than the amount that is actually required. On slide 23, we'll take a look at how Java program requests are handled. When an application requests execution of a Java program, HIX first tries to find a suitable JVM that is available for reuse in the JVM pool. An application can reuse an available JVM if the JVM was created using the JVM profile and the execution key that are specified in the Java program resource definition. If a suitable JVM is available, CICS assigns the JVM to the request. If HIX cannot find a suitable JVM and a new JVM cannot be created because the JVM pool is full, then CICS must decide on the best way to provide the application with a JVM. HIX can fulfill an application's request for a JVM by either taking a free JVM that has the right execution key but the wrong profile, destroying it, and reinitializing it with the correct profile. This is known as mismatch. Or it can destroy a free JVM and its TCBs that are in the wrong execution key and replace it with a JVM and TCB in the correct execution key, which is known as stealing. Both of mismatch and a steal are expensive. So before taking one of these courses of action, CICS must decide if it is worthwhile. It might be more economical for the overall system performance for CICS to make the application wait until a suitable JVM is available and to keep the free JVM for requests that can benefit more from them. If this is the case, then the task will be suspended in a JVM underscore pool wait, thus reducing the number of JVM and TCB recycles. On slide number 24, recycling JVMs. Within a given JVM pool, if max JVM TCBs has been reached, it is possible that not all JVMs will be assigned work. These out of JVMs can then be recycled and reused for any JVM requests that are currently waiting or any new requests that come in. This recycling is expensive, so CICS uses a selection mechanism to reduce how often it occurs. If any request that is waiting for a JVM to become free has been waiting longer than a critical period, which is determined by CICS, CICS gives it the next available JVM, regardless of the profile, an execution key. This will cause either a mismatch or a steal where the JVM and possibly the TCB will be reinitialized. If requests are queuing and a JVM becomes free, but no requests have been waiting longer than the critical period, CICS will scan through the queue to find the longest waiting request that requires a JVM with that profile and execution key. It gives the free JVM to the longest waiting request that specifies the correct profile and key. So in this situation, the JVM does not need to be reinitialized, and the mismatch or steal is avoided. If CICS cannot find a request that matches the profile and execution key of the free JVM, it scans through the queue again and uses the selection mechanism to look for a request where it will be an advantage to destroy and reinitialize the free JVM. A mismatch or a steal will occur, but the selection mechanism ensures that it occurs for a deserving request. And if CICS does not find a request in the queue where it would be an advantage to destroy and reinitialize the free JVM, the JVM will be kept free to await a more appropriate use. So in summary, on slide 25, we have taken a look at how CICS has extended support for Java workloads and continues to expand with each new release. How Java programs can now use storage protection by running in either KickSecure or YubiKey. How the Java classes can be shared between JVMs via the shared class cache. We took a look at the different JVM reuse modes and how the integrity and performance of Java applications are affected by each. How program requests are mapped by CICS to provide the best optimization of JVM and our TCB reinitialization, and how multiple JVMs can now be supported for a given KIX task. On the next slide, number 26, we will take a brief look at how to set up CICS to run a Java application. As documented in the KIX program directory, the Java components are unloaded for the distribution tapes during the standard installation process, so there is nothing specific needed to be done to install them. But you do have to do a few things to set up CICS for Java support. In order to create JVM, CICS requires access to the directories and files in the Unix System Services HFS. Therefore, you must give the CICS regions access to these resources in order to create JVMs and use the HFS files in connection with KIX web services. You can achieve this by assigning a suitable Unix user ID and group ID for your KIX region, specifying a home directory on the HFS for your KIX region user, and mounting this HFS directory, granting KIX users read, write, and execute access to the directories and files needed to create the JVM, granting the KIX user read and execute access to the different directories and files that are specified on the class path option, specified on the shareable application class path property option that you have added to the trusted middleware class path using the TM prefix or TM suffix options that you have added to the live path, holding any JVM profiles or properties file that you may have created, and also access to the pickup directory. The KIX user must also have read and write access to the shelf directory. On the next slide, the second step is to set up the JVM profile. The JVM is started by the CICS Java Launcher, which uses a set of options known as a JVM profile. The JVM profile determines the characteristics of a JVM that must be set up to create a JVM for your Java application. JVM profiles allow you to specify options that produce different JVMs depending on your application requirements. The JVM profile is a text file stored on HFS. When an application requests a JVM and names a particular JVM profile for CICS to use, CICS looks in the HFS directory that is specified by the JVM profile dir system initialization parameter and loads the JVM profile from that directory. The default value is /user /lpp /CICSTS, cicsts/JVM profiles. HIC ships 5 sample JVM profiles for each of the different types of JVMs that can be used. The profiles are pointed to by the default JVM profile option on the program definition. JVM profile parameters that can be specified are documented in the HIC system definition guide if further information is needed. On the next slide, number 28, we see that a JVM profile can contain 3 types of parameters. The standard Java options for program locations, which can be anything from the live path, which specifies the search path for the JVM code itself and the native DLLs to be loaded by the JVM, or the class path for the Java application or the trusted middleware classes. It also contains the kick-specific parameters, such as the directory path name, such as kick's directory or Java home, where the output from the JVM is to be written, whether the JVM uses a shared class cache, and if so, whether it is a master JVM or a worker JVM, and whether the JVM runs in continuous, resettable, or single-use mode. The third type of parameters in the JVM profile are the non-standard Java options, which are specific to the IBM Persistent Reusable JVM. It can also contain the location of the JVM system's properties files and stack and heap size settings for the JVM. If you need to set environment variables to control the behavior of the KIX JVM, you should specify them within the JVM profile. On slide 29, we see a sample of the default profile DFH JVM PR. This profile is for a standalone JVM. There are several key KIX-specific JVM profile parameters, but the two to note in this sample is the class cache option and the reuse option, which we had discussed earlier. On slide 30, the next step is to set up the JVM properties file. Each JVM profile references the JVM properties file. The JVM properties file is also an HFS text file, which contains the system properties for the JVM. System properties are key name and value pairs passed to the JVM at initialization. They contain basic information about the JVM and its environment, such as the operating system in which the application is running. The JVM properties file also determines the security properties of the JVM. When CICS is installed, the KIX-supplied sample JVM properties files are placed in the directory /user/LPP/CICSTS/CICSTS/props. The JVM props option on the JVM profile specifies the path of the system properties files. KIX supplies sample properties files for each of the supplied JVM profiles. Any system property that you would specify using the -d option when launching the JVM from the command line should be specified within the JVM system's properties file. On the next slide, we see that within the JVM properties file, you can specify the shareable application class path. The shareable application classes are programs loaded at JVM initialization time and that are not removed when the program terminates. The property name is ibm.jvm.shareable.application.classpath, which is used to specify the class path for these classes. If you would also like to enable Java 2 security for a JVM and specify any additional policy files that you want the security manager to use, you need to customize the JVM properties file for the java.security.manager and java.security.policy options. System properties specific to the IBM Persistent Reusable JVM are also documented within the KIX Systems Definition Guide. On slide number 32, you have a sample system properties file. This file shows how to specify the class path to be used by the shareable application class loader to load classes and jars in the application shared system heap by specifying the ibm.jvm.shareable.application.class.path option. Note that the Java 2 security options down at the bottom are not in use for this sample. On slide 33, step 4 is to set up the shared class cache for uses. You can set up and customize a shared class cache for your KIX region so that the JVMs can start up faster. CICS supports one active shared class cache in each region. This enables you to support the majority of the JVMs in each region. Some of the JVMs in the region might not be suited to sharing the class cache because either they have an inappropriate level of reusability or because they are debug JVMs used for problem diagnosis. These JVMs can still run as standalone JVMs and have their own cache of classes in their storage heaps. Before setting up the shared class cache, you need to check the options for semaphores that you have set in the BPX PRM XX member in the sys1.parm line. Master JVM that initializes the shared class cache uses a single semaphore ID and requests a set of 32 semaphores. So you need to ensure that the MNIDS value is set high enough for the maximum number of semaphore IDs that are in use at one time. And you need to ensure that the MNSEMS value is set high enough for the maximum number of semaphores that the master JVM requests in a semaphore set. This value must be either 32 or greater. Note that the MNIDS and MNSEMS options can be found in the Unix System Services Command Reference Manual under the Shell Command Descriptions option. In CICS, you must also set up the class cache by specifying three options within the SID: JVM CC profile, JVM CC size, and JVM CC start. On slide number 34, the last step to enable your Java application for JVM use. This is for non-Java applications. CICS requires that you define the resources needed to run a Java program in a JVM. CICS also needs to know where to find the classes that the application will use. To enable a standard Java application, which is one that is not a core with stateless object or an enterprise bean, to use the JVM, you need to first select or create an appropriate JVM profile for each Java program to use. Check the programming considerations that apply to each of the possible levels of reusability for the JVM so that it's either resettable, continuous, or should run in single-use mode, and ensure that your application design takes this into account. You should set the appropriate Java attributes on the program definition. These attributes specify that the program needs a JVM, what the JVM profile and execution key for that JVM must be, and what the main class is in the program. You should also add the classes that the application uses to the class path for the JVM, which are set by using options in the JVM profile and JVM properties file. This can be set either via the class path option in the profile or the shareable class path option in the properties file. Note that within the class loader hierarchy, the shareable class path takes precedence over the application class path. So if you have the classes defined in both sections, it will look for it in the shareable class path for anything. When you have set a program resource definition for your Java program and added the application classes to the class path, the Java program is now ready to run. On slide 35, that brings us to the end of this presentation, so I will now turn it back over to Teresa.
Stacy, at this point, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. Also, if you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, for questions and comments today, please press star 1 at this time, and we'll pause for a moment. And we do have a question from Wendell Lovewell.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm kind of new at the Java thing. Can you discuss the benefits and disadvantages of running Java programs under CICS versus somewhere else, WebSphere, or as a batch or started task?
I can't exactly answer that because from a WebSphere point of view, I don't really know what the difference is as compared to running under CICS. I only know from a CICS point of view, Adding JVM support to your Kix region will allow you to run applications written in Java, whereas without it you can't. And I know a lot of businesses are moving towards designing and coding applications in Java, so that allows them to run those applications using their CICS regions as well as interfacing with their old legacy applications that are written in other languages as well. But again, as far as comparison of CICS versus WebSphere, I don't know off the top of my head what the differences are, the gains would be from that.
Okay. Can I ask another question, please?
Uh-huh.
It seems like there are a lot of chances to do this wrong with all the settings that you go through and make. Is there any kind of, some way to make this easier? Some kind of performance statistics or something that tells you, hey, you should have done it this way?
That's a good question. I know as far as performance and statistics, I didn't mention it in the presentation, but you could use things such as KixPA to check different settings. I don't know if it'll tell you any recommendations or point blank how to make it easier, but it does give you sort of a viewpoint of where to start as far as the settings are concerned. I don't think it's really easy for anyone to give sort of a cookie cutter way of setting this up because each environment is different. So it basically depends on what you want, wanting to get out of running with Java and CICS and what your environment is set up to be like.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And once again, it is star 1 if you do have a question, and we'll go to Elena Nanos.
I would like to answer the questions that the gentleman asked before, if I may.
Okay.
I have presented this information at the tech conference last year, and I have a presentation which has actual examples and data which compares running continuous JVM versus the standard JVM. So if you're interested, I can forward that information. Also, I can answer your question regarding comparing WebSphere to CICS. The biggest difference is that WebSphere has only one JVM, and if there's a problem with WebSphere address space, for example, transaction times out, WebSphere will abend. That's why WebSphere has multiple server regions, so you have availability. The biggest difference with CICS is that you have multiple JVMs. So if one JVM goes down, needless to say, the entire CICS address space does not go down. So that's the biggest advantage. I have done a lot of testing with CICS JVM Java application under CICS TS2.2 comparing to WebSphere version 5. At the time, the overhead in CICS was much higher. Since then, with version 2.3, IBM have made tremendous improvements in startup of JVM and with continuous JVM. And performance within CICS is still a little behind, but it's not as bad as it was in 2.2. Again, I have all this data in a presentation that I presented at a tech conference, and if you're interested, I would be happy to forward it to you, and I have notes on every page.
And that was Elaine?
Elena Nanos. I work for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. If you want me to get in touch or if you want to pass my email address to the gentleman who was asking a question, I would be happy to send my presentation which answers his specific questions.
Okay.
This is Teresa Hamilton. It may also be possible to include that in our tech doc that will be out on the web. So we'll look into that.
I also have written quite a few articles on the subject, so if anybody has questions, this is kind of area of my expertise.
Okay. Thank you, Elena.
You're welcome.
So we'll move next to Eileen Barco.
Yes, I have a question. I understand, well, I know up until now CICS Java does not support X11 graphics, so it means you can't run a lot of Java programs. You can't run applets, anything using swing classes. Is there any plans to support this?
I can only speak up to the current release of CICS, which is Transaction Server 3.1, which, as you mentioned, it isn't available. I don't know if there's any plans for any of the future releases to include that at this time.
which is why you have to use WebSphere for some Java, at least to run applets and things like that.
Right.
Okay, I don't know if you know the answer. They sent out a notice about the understanding the CICS and Java Red Book, and they give you Chapter 7 and trying to find the sample code, and they leave out the text files. They leave out the COBOL and VSAM JCL files that you need to build the sample. Do you know anything about that?
That's a Red Book called...
Yeah, the Red Book. I have the number here. The number was SG24575 or something like that. I have it someplace, but...
I'm not aware of that Red Book at the moment, but
okay, well,
I can get that number from you. I can look into it and get back
to you. It's just in Java, and they tell you to go to the... there's an FTP site, and there's an site to get the additional materials, and they have the Java code and the Java files, but they don't give the text files that you need. There's also COBOL programs involved with that, and VSAN files. I'm supposed to give the JCL to create the VSAN files and the COBOL code, and they don't. It's not there.
Eileen, you know what might work best is if you would send an email, or we could get your email address, which I believe we have, and then we can respond to those specific questions, okay?
Okay, thank you.
And at this time, there are no further questions in the queue, but one final reminder, it is star one if you do have a question. We'll go to Gregory Hare.
Yes, you had indicated there was something about some kind of tech doc that's going to be put out at the end of this. Is there going to be a link on from the webpage here, from where and you indicated that there was going to be the lady from Blue Cross Blue Shield Illinois had indicated she could give you some links to some of the stuff that she's done.
This is Teresa Hamilton. Yes, there is a tech talk, and that tech talk will be updated. It'll be updated, first of all, with the MP3 file, which will allow you to replay the presentation. And what I'm going to look into is as to whether or not we can include the Blue Cross Blue Shield presentation also. And that tech talk number is 700-6924, 700-6924. And the MP3 will be available within the next couple of days, and I'm hoping within the next week or so we can check to see whether or not we can include the Blue Cross Blue Shield presentation.
And then just a little quick follow-up question. I'm very mainframe-orientated and just trying to get started in this. And we're at Transaction Server 2.2 right now. And I see on my messages coming up that I do see this Enterprise Java Domain Initialization has ended. So it looks like I've got some things turned on. Is there any sample code anywhere or anything that I could do, that I could download that would show me how this is actually working, that I could go to some of the people that know Java and say, hey, we got this capability that you can get into our CICS systems using Java code? But I don't know any, like, a lot of times we get sample code for different COBOL programs and things to test when we, like, initialization programs or IBP type programs. Is there anything like that with the Java CICS piece?
We do provide some sample programs, like we have a sample Hello World program, and there's various others that I can't name off the top of my head.
Is it documented in the install guides or in...
Should be documented. I know it should be documented within the Java Applications for Kix guide.
Okay, which I obviously haven't read or looked at.
If you want, I can send you an email update with where that information is actually documented.
That would be great.
Okay, and that's Gregory Hare.
Yes. And yeah, my email address is on there.
Okay.
That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have a follow up from Elaine Anonymous.
I just wanted to answer the last question. It is documented in a Red Book, which specifically was written for version 2.2. I can also include that information. But I wanted to warn you that under CICS TS 2.2, Java performance is does not compare to 2.3, so if you're planning to use it for production, I would not recommend to use 2.2. In fact, our testing showed that if you run it in WebSphere comparing to CICSDS to 2, performance and overhead may be 4 times higher. There are great improvements in 2.3 in that area, so you may start testing with 2.2, but you most definitely do not want to go with Java support because of performance implications into production with version 2.2.
All right. And also, I'd just like to mention that 2.2 is out of support, so if you do run into any problem, it'd be better to have one of the later releases.
Yeah, but the Red Book is like a Bible. It's an excellent book, and it's step-by-step, and it has samples, and it has examples, and you can just follow it. It's an excellent document, and it was written at 2.2 level, so I would highly, highly recommend it.
Okay. Thank you, Elena.
Sure.
And at this time, there are no further questions in the queue. Ms. Hamilton, I'll turn the call back over to you.
Hi. I first wanted to say that the Tech Talk is available by searching on any IBM.com site, including the Kix support site, just typing up in the black search box or in the search box on the Kix page. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. Remember, a replay of this presentation will be available on the IBM WebSphere Technical Exchange site within the next day or two. We hope that you will join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Shayla, for presenting today.
And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and have a great day.